Quick little PSA, I just want to let you know that the new Sends and Suffers t-shirts have dropped. Your boy, if you are looking at your pocket supercomputer, that new photo made by Texas legend Hank is out on t-shirt. $30 for a shirt, $5 for shipping and handling. Message me on social media. I'll get you the information right away, or email me at sendsandsuffers@gmail.com. Hope you enjoy today's episode. Get some gear, rep it, post it, show it, and be much appreciated. Organic Climbing is the official sponsor of Sends and Suffers podcast, and if you didn't know, now you know. I have been using this company's products since before my podcast, since I basically started rock climbing. They're cool, they're rad, they're customizable. You can get bouldering pads, chalk buckets, backpacks, they've got shoes, they've got almost anything you can conceive to make you look fly, to make you functional at the crag. Check out Organic Climbing, put in Sends and Suffers at your purchase. It helps this podcast out and really support someone who has been supporting the conception of climbing communities since the beginning. Josh and everyone at Organic is all about making sure communities grow. And that is a huge thing coming from a small company that moves massive, massive mountains. So check out Organic Climbing. Tell them I sent you. Let's get into this episode. Friends and enemies, lovers and haters, welcome to Sends and Suffers podcast. I am your host, Mario Stanley. If you haven't already, please follow, like, and subscribe to Sends and Suffers podcast. Every bit counts, and we would love to hear from you. So take a moment to leave a comment. These go a long way and help others know what they're getting into and how good this show is. If this is one of your favorite podcasts, consider becoming a Patreon. For as little as $5 a month, you are investing in Sends and Suffers podcast, and it's like buying your boy a taco, hanging out, and getting to know the good that is coming your way. Monthly recaps, early show releases, and all the other cool things that we do. Thank you so much for listening to Sends and Suffers podcasts. On today's episode of Sends and Suffers, we have none other than Pete Woods. Now, Pete Woods hails from the Canadian motherland. And for those of you who have been in the game for a while, I'm talking like way back. I'm talking like when we were watching climbing videos just past VHS. The man has been around. Pete is a climbing legend competing in the Canadian circuit, also being an ESPN broadcaster for climbing and a climbing coach. You know, in a way, he has hit aspects of the industry that I aspire to be in, and then others that I don't know if I could really do it. I mean, broadcasting is hard, but I'm going to let him tell you all about that. I hope you enjoy this episode with Pete Woods talking about his time in climbing and professional broadcasting and coaching and just being a man who is chasing after his dream unabashedly. Enjoy the episode with Pete Woods. Pete, how are you?
I'm good, brother. How are you?
Doing all right. The last time I saw you was in Salt Lake when you did a podcast with Chris, our boy, Chris Hampton. Mm-hmm. When was that?
2021. That was my first World Cup as a lead commentator.
It's a big deal.
It is a big deal. And that was, we did that bit before the first comp. So we did it like, it was either 2 days before or the night before. And it was basically like sort of, you know, what are you feeling? How did you get here? But not how was it? So it was kind of a fun road up to like express, like, this is a big deal. And, you know, you got to remember that it's a big deal, but don't get too freaked out.
Okay. So I'm not going to assume most of, I mean, in my mind, you're a living legend. So let's just be honest, in my mind. But I'm not going to assume that most of my audience knows who you are, where you're from. Can you tell me who you are, where you're from,
a little backstory about you and what is your connection to climbing, which I think everyone should know, but you know, the world's a different place now.
That's true. It's true. My name is Pete Woods, MC Pete Woods. I am Canadian. I grew up in Ontario, in Ottawa. I was born in Montreal, so I'm officially French.
Oh, nice. I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. And I've been living in Alberta for like 24 years. So
okay.
I'm on the west side in the mountains. And I've been climbing for, it's over more than 25 years. And I've been coaching and competing. I started competing the year I started climbing. I started coaching like 5 years after I started climbing. I coached youth and stuff. And when I stopped competing, as you taper down and you realize that the kids are really good and you're 30 something.
Yeah.
I just was approached with an opportunity to MC a Tour de Bloc, which is a Canadian series of competitions. It goes coast to coast. It was like our national championship series before we had an official national championship, provincials, regionals, all that kind of
stuff.
That
makes sense.
Yeah. So early 2000s. And I think I had, you know, when you have like one of those over the ear mics.
Countrymen.
And I was like, I'm not wearing that thing. Like on, so I was, and it had a little cord and I was holding it like a little tiny little Bob Barker microphone.
Yeah.
And I emceed the final at my home gym and it was a blast. And then, so I was like, this is cool. Like, this is something we should do more of, you know, in climbing. And I was lucky to have a gym owner, Walson Tai, who owns Calgary Climbing Centers in Calgary. Just had a bit of vision, you know. Okay. And then either that same year or the next year, he was like, I want to do a live stream. So we did a Tour de Bloc and we basically, I mean, it was held together by sheer force of will, like cable internet. I was sitting on top of one of our boulders in the back bouldering area. I had like three laptops and a flask of whiskey, and they used the security cameras that they use for like for judges to go do appeals. And I just talked about climbing for 3.5 hours to myself on a live stream broadcast with like 47 people watching. And that was the birth of, I could do this. And I went from being a hobby to something that I started working on. And learning sort of how to be part of a broadcast and then how to be an MC and how to, you know, move between those two spaces in the climbing world. And it's grown. I did every Canadian Nationals that we streamed. Okay. And then a couple years ago, I did, you know, started doing US National Comps, which is pretty awesome. And then I did a couple of World Cup seasons. That we can talk about that, but that sort of, we had a bit of a gap.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I've taken it up to as far as, you know, as far as it goes, and I'm still in it, and it's so much fun.
So I'd like to back up a little bit. I didn't know that you were a youth coach and you were actually a coach, because like that's my full-time job, mm-hmm. coaching kids and coaching athletes. How was that part of your life? And do you think that really kind of like help you become a better broadcaster, and like did it play into that? Because I know that's your career now, but can you tell me a little bit about your coaching? Like, what was it like? What athletes were you coaching? When was this?
Mm-hmm. We're about to take a left turn. It's about to be a coaching podcast episode.
We're gonna go back and forth. We're gonna go back and forth.
I started coaching when I moved to Calgary, and there was an opportunity to coach the B youth team. So we had like an A team and a B team. So I was mm-hmm. coaching the B youth team at the Calgary Climbing Center. Like pretty psyched 13, 14, 15 year old kids, 12 cool. year old kids. I actually think there were some younger, because we used to be able to compete in Canada, especially there was an 11 and under category at Nationals.
That's cool.
So 10 year old kids, like forget their chalk bags, like shoes don't, they wear their climbing shoes like all day, like coaching those kids. It just got me into the idea that you could impart knowledge. So I coached a little bit out of university. I went back and coached volleyball at my old high school when I was in university.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that I liked the idea of coaching, and I knew that I liked, you know, how it worked. Mm-hmm. And so I coached that team, and then that coach left and I was given the opportunity to coach like the, you know, the Calgary's youth team, because there was only one gym at the time. So I coached Calgary's youth team for a couple of seasons and then had an opportunity to coach the Canadian youth team to the Youth World Championships. So I coached with Mike Doyle,
okay,
who's a legend. Shout out to Mike. Yeah. So we took the team to France for the Youth World Championships in 2002. Jason Hollowitz, Sean McCall, like in that era. and I loved it. I coached the youth team for another couple of years in Calgary. And then in a weird twist, they started training first thing in the morning. And I had a full-time desk job, so I couldn't like get to work at 9 every day. Like I couldn't like the days that we were coaching. So I gave up youth coaching earlier than I think I probably would have, because I really enjoyed coaching youth athletes, especially elite, like the Weldons, Stacey and Vicky Weldon. I coached them and they were so psyched and so good. And I loved that, you know, being able to coach kids that were pushing to be national champions. And then, so I kind of turned it into coaching adults. So I coach, you know, different versions of an advanced bouldering clinic off and on for, nearly like 18 years.
Oh, wow.
So I've been coaching pretty regularly now. The last few years I coach like individuals, and then I coach an advanced clinic aimed at kind of V5 to V8 climbers who are in that plateau space. And I focus a lot on movement. So I'm like, I'm dialed into movement, and that along with broadcasting, where you need to focus on what's going on and can you break down movement? Can you explain to people watching at home why something is difficult? Can you at least internalize it and then know like when to be interested, when not to be interested, like what's generic, what's legit difficult, how are people doing things differently, and seeing that and breaking it down. It's very similar. So coaching and broadcasting, when you look at analyzing movement, very, very similar. And, you know, that connection has really, you know, it aligns for me and I super enjoy it.
It makes a lot of sense because I think that's probably the hardest part because, Taylor Fragamini and I, we just finished an episode, but we talk about this all the time when we get on the phone. You know, we think that most people overemphasize like the physical aspect of climbing, just like trying to get kids strong and powerful or like get their endurance up. And the reality of what it is understanding complex movement. And I like makes sense now why you're such a good commentator, because like if you've coached and you understand like movement is the most fundamental thing, it doesn't matter how strong you are. Like, I mean, I don't remember what it was when Sasha DeJulian did her first 514. People were like, she can barely do like 5 pull-ups in a row, but it didn't freaking matter. She knew how to move. Mm-hmm. And like, I think that's the fundamentally the most challenging and most complicated thing. Mm-hmm. I think, but yeah, no, that translates a lot into that. And I was curious if like your coaching and translate, hold on 1 second. Okay, I thought they were about to open the door and let it slam.
Smash in.
Yeah, I was like, ah! Yeah, for those of you who are watching this video, we are currently in Chattanooga, Tennessee at the very first ever indoor climbing expo. And I mean, I think it's going swingingly so far. What do you think?
I think it's great. Like I walked around yesterday, there's, you know, a pile of people exhibiting here. And then we had the Moonboard Comp last night and it was
good.
Off the hook good.
Can you talk about that a little bit? Who was at the Moonboard Comp? And it got a little wild there. I mean, I think a few people came in and smashed who people were expecting to come in and smash. Mm-hmm. But
you couldn't have picked, I mean, you maybe could have swapped one or two people out here and there, but everybody in that room is at the peak of climbing.
Yeah.
So Daniel Woods, Paul Robinson, Taylor McNeil, Ravioli Biceps. Biceps is moonboard. Like all he does is climb on the moonboard.
Yeah.
That's his jam.
Yeah.
Sierra Blair Coyle, Allison Vest, Maya Madair, Sarah Gerhardt. There's like 100 million V points in that list of people.
Yeah.
And they, I was just talking to somebody this morning in the lobby. The crowd was like into it, but they were like, entertain me. I'm like, V12 flash on the moonboard is peak climbing performance right now, in my opinion. That is so difficult, and doing it for 2 hours.
I agree, but I think the thing that you and I have, like you and I both agree, and everyone who is a climber agrees, but I think the vast majority of climbers, like it's just, it doesn't equate, because it's not this big, giant 30-foot high ball, or it's not these like, man, those crimps on this boulder look heinous. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, there's these series of holds and the move lights up. But once again, we get back to like where you're talking about it. Like people don't understand how they don't understand visually how to discern movement and what in movement is challenging. It's like the Paul Robinson move, like boulder that he put up, and then that huge move that Daniel just was like twinkle fingers on,
yeah,
and just grabbed on and held it like it was nothing,
mm-hmm.
and then just pulled through. And then Paul got up to do the same thing. Ravi Early Biceps got up to do the same thing, and it was just like a shutdown.
Yeah,
and everyone's just like, oh, it just doesn't look that hard, but because it's not this like daunting boulder, this daunting rock, yeah. this thing,
or like a paddle dyno that people understand, I can't do that. But people yes. think they can crimp, and people think they can wingspan half pad open Gaston with two hands. They don't understand how hard, because I can grab that hold, but you can't grab that hold at past your expansion of mobility
mm-hmm.
and keep tension across your chest all the way down the other side through your hand into your other two fingertips.
Yeah, no, people don't understand
that. You can't
do
that.
It's one of the key things talking about movement. I always tell people, I'm like, we don't want to do this with our arms when we can. We always want to kind of be here. So think the rubber band has a little bounce to it.
You've got a little suspension in the system.
Just a little bit. But people are like, no, I can do me. But I mean, that's so getting back to that, it's like, you know, this is even more of an emphasis of like why it is so important to like look and understand movement in climbing. We're in a place that's selling all these beautiful, gorgeous holds, but these holds are solely, strictly designed to create awkward movement.
Exactly.
And I enjoyed it thoroughly. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I had to leave a little bit before the end because I was getting hangry. And so I needed to eat some food because I was running around here all day. But I was watching them climb and I'm just like, these people are at, you know, you were like, we're in the clouds, you know, watching these people. And someone looked like they were puzzled when you said that. I was like, the people you are watching climb right now live on Mount Olympus of rock climbing.
Yes.
The rest of us are peasants.
Yep.
You know, and this guy looked at me like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. And I'm like literally these people hang out with, you know, Prometheus, Thor,
yep.
you know, all the gods yep. of like the, you know, Zeus is just like, come up and party. You know, the rest of us do not, mere mortals do not get to come through there. And it's just because of their accolades and because of like, they're just true understanding of movement,
mm-hmm.
of the sport in general.
I mean, even I was talking to Dan Woods yesterday. I'd never met him. So I was psyched. We were, like, you know, we had our little group meeting to kind of, I mean, it was fun. We hashed out the format yesterday.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So Travis, who put on this expo, was like, I'm going to have a moonboard comp.
Done.
Stop. Him and I had talked about the idea of playing horse, and we had actually done it at the Jackalope Fest. We played horse and a dyno comp,
mm-hmm.
and it worked out really well. It was pretty cool because you like figure out your opponent's weaknesses and just keep throwing the same kind of stuff at them. So we had talked about it, but he hadn't told the athletes anything. So we had a meeting yesterday, hashed out the format, which is kind of funny. The yeah. same day of, and then I asked, you know, just sort of chatting with Dan after. A, they're all super nice. A, yeah. they're all shorter than you think they are.
Yeah.
Just in case you think D was 7 feet tall, but he's my height.
Yeah.
And he's looking at projects that are still off the grade, like off the number system. Like mm-hmm. they're harder than what's been done. And he doesn't think he's a lot stronger than he was when he first did V14. He mm-hmm. thinks he understands how to position, how to move, how to be mentally strong, how to look after himself, how to recover, how to prepare and how to stay up here,
mm-hmm.
how to stay focused after multiple, and when we say multiple, when we're talking elite rock climbing, multiple failures is in the months / approaching a year / mm-hmm. more. He's like, you shouldn't do the hardest thing in the world in a month, or why would it be the hardest thing in the world? No. So you have to settle in mm-hmm. for an epic journey. And he's like, you know, we think that professional climbers are like, oh, you're used to it, you just brush it off. He's like, when you want something so bad, you have to learn to deal with the failure. And I mean, is he a little stronger than he was? Maybe. Is he older?
Yeah.
Also true. So understanding that the connection between you, body position, subtleties, micro adjustments, things that like I'm sure you coach, I coach as well, is when you're climbing V1, V2, you have light bulb moments. Oh, left hand, then right hand.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, left foot on.
Heel or.
Oh, okay.
I need my heel just a little bit farther over my. I need my yeah. hips just a little bit farther over my heel to make this slopy match work. Right. Like there's like micro adjustments.
Yeah.
And micro beta.
Yeah. And when you're climbing, you know, at the top of the scale, it's I need to be 1 or 2 degrees closer to the wall, farther away from the wall. I need to have that toe like angled in and down, not in and over. Mm-hmm. Like you're playing with tiny, 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 tiny things.
It's like climbing on limestone. I was talking to someone about this last night.
It's like grabbing soap.
They were like, and I know I'm about to get so much hate for what I'm about to say, but this is my podcast.
And I'm saying it anyway.
But you know, I'm going to be PG because that was a request because I realized some kids listen to my podcast.
Dude, but I swear a lot.
But AF all y'all. So, but I get bored climbing at the red, you know? And it's like, I think, you know, and now granted, these are the big steep things, the paddle thing. And people are looking at me like you're crazy. Now granted, I haven't done a lot of the trad. I haven't done a lot of the vert or any things like that that are super technical. But this is why I like climbing limestone so much. Cause it's like especially like in Wild Iris, in El Salto, even when I was in Siriana, like you have these like micro adjustments. You can't just put your foot in the pocket. Yeah. You got to like turn, tilt down.
Yeah.
Like these, all these little freaking details. And I think.
And it's glassy. In between is glassy. And some of the feet get glassy. Like if you climb in font, right? Anything porous that slowly like brings in chalk and rubber over time. And limestone is different.
It's not forgiving.
Yeah. And that's why we climb a limestone in Alberta. Valley is like, you can't, all the rock is the same color. It's all shades of gray.
Oh, that's Texas.
And that you can't really see the chalk, right? So yeah. You climb like I'm the first time I went to Red Rocks, people are like, you can on-site from the parking lot in Vegas because you can see the chalk on the holds.
Yes.
And you can walk, you're standing underneath like a route in the Bow Valley and I'm walking you through, right? You're like, I'm gonna flash this thing. And I'm walking you through and I'm like, okay. And then left hand of that Gaston, you're like, what? The gray, like, okay, which gray streak? Okay, back up. So remember that? Remember this handle? Yeah. The pocket. Okay. Yeah. And I'll go about 2 feet to the right. Yeah. And then up a foot. Uh-huh. That Gaston. I don't see it.
You'll see it when you get there.
We'll see it when you get there. And you might not. You're like, this one, no, bro. This one. And you grab it and you're like, that's the one.
Yeah.
So that's limestone.
Yeah. Limestone is just reticent. I think that's the word I would like to give it. Like, limestone is the most reticent rock that I've ever climbed on. The only other thing that I think is close to it is white granite. But like, that's just
gives
like,
you nothing.
Oh, that just, it just kicks your ass. Mm-hmm. Like, Genevieve and I were in Malawi and we were bolting on white granite down there. And I remember just like looking for holds and I was just like on stuff that we were bolting and on sighting. And we're just like, this is like the hardest thing in the world.
Yeah, it's rough. It's fun though.
It is. So where are you going in your career right now? Because I think you have, I'm gonna be honest, like you kind of have a dream career, which a lot of us like would like, I think some of us would like dream about being on the microphone, talking about climbing all day. This is our career. This is what we're doing. But at the same time, I think so many people are afraid of being in front of the camera, but I think it's kind of like everybody idolizes actors or like, mm-hmm. like, oh, this is such a dream job, but then they don't want to do it. In my opinion, I think you've got this like really great, you've dug out this really great niche for yourself. And I think that is a testament to your charisma, your ability to kind of think outside of the box. And I think most climbers who are really moving and shaking are thinking that way. And I also think it's just your wealth of experience as a competitive climber. And I see now, hearing a little bit about your coaching life, I can hear that in your broadcasting and it makes way more sense of why you're such a good commentator. Where are you trying to go to right now? And like, what's your next big hurdle that you're trying to get over, and where are you trying to do? What are you trying to do?
Well, thank you for one. I really appreciate that. I'm gonna be a bit real. You know, there's a bit of armchair quarterback, mm-hmm. you know, out in the world. Like anybody that watches other, I know climbers don't watch a lot of other sports, but some climbers watch other sports.
I do.
And
yeah.
You watch other sports and you're like, oh, like sometimes you're like, I could do that job. I could come, like the commentators are trash today, right? You're like, why are you saying that? Or you're like, John Madden is like, you hear the same things over and over and over. I mean, I just dated myself, but
yeah. No, I mean,
old
people
football commentators, right? So people get it. You're like, oh, you kind of roll your eyes. And the only things you ever really, you see a lot of both, but you see a lot of negatives. People just pick the one time you mispronounced one person's Slovenian name with 900 consonants in a row. Mm-hmm. And they're like, they'll hammer away on the chat. Like, that's not how you say that. So you kind of, you have to have a bit of a thick skin about it. And you have to kind of be able to have people being like, I could do your job. And you think, okay, let me, let me break it down for you. And I talk to people about it because I think it's really interesting. And something that I've learned about myself only in the last year or two is that I'm an ADHD person, mm-hmm. and I'm almost 50.
I mean, so. I could have told you that just slowly, like within the first 15. There's someone who has been taking ADHD meds since they was like 7 or 9 years old. Mm-hmm. I mean, bro.
Yeah. So I've always just thought I was a bit like easily distracted, forgetful, like all mm-hmm. these things. Sometimes I talk too much, like all of that. But then when you're on a broadcast, and if you're an analyst, it's a bit different, but when you're the lead, you, in your headset, is a producer. So you have a voice in your ear, mm-hmm. And sometimes they're talking to you, and sometimes they're not, and you're watching the screen, and you're in a conversation with your co-commentator mm-hmm. about climbing as a thread mm-hmm. and the competition and what's going on, and you're deciding what to talk about, and you're deciding, when I ask you a question, while you're talking, the producer might be talking to me, but I'm still listening to you, mm-hmm. and I'm deciding whether or not I'm going to finish what you're saying, or whether I'm going to snap it off and get back to the action because I see something setting up to be something we haven't seen before. Mm. Or am I going to continue your thought and move it to something else or hand it back to you for something that you're the expert on? Or am I going to continue the thought, close it, stop it in the middle, something's happening, producer's talking, something else is happening. Oh, it's semifinals. So there's multiple climbers on the wall. Oh, camera two. Oh, we're going to a replay.
I'm not going to lie, you lost me at the second or.
Right?
Yeah, like that's a lot.
So that's all happening at the same time for hours. Ooh. Not for 10 minutes, for hours. So I've had a few people sit, like guest in and just be the analyst, and I get a text message later, I'm exhausted.
I'm exhausted thinking about it.
And people are like, are you coming out? And I'm like, I'm going to crash. Like, you know, it's a lot. So I think that it's a privilege, mm-hmm. But I've worked really hard at it. And I've worked really hard to try and be good at it because I think the people watching climbing competitions deserve to be treated to an experience that is on the level with other sports broadcasts. So I take it seriously, and you know, I definitely work hard at it, but it's not easy. You know, it's not the hardest thing in the world, obviously. It's a great opportunity. Mm-hmm. So, and I love it. You know, I wouldn't trade it for a lot of things. You know, it's a really good time. Right now, the biggest hurdle is federations, money, time, and I don't know if politics is the right word, but
I mean, politics are involved in everything. I mean,
yeah,
politics is a broad stroke, but I like to say politics are just people's opinions, yeah, and people's thoughts. Yeah.
So I didn't do the World Cups this year. So we had a conversation at the beginning of the year, back and forth, and I, you know, my availability for World Cups this year, and then the IFSC made a decision. And I can't fault them. They're still potentially my employer.
Yeah.
But they decided they wanted a single voice across all the World Cups.
A single voice?
Single voice. So consistency. So they asked Matt to do every World Cup and then every Olympic qualifier, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I personally am of the opinion, coming from other sports, that having variety is great. If you watch Sunday Night Football, it's a different pair than Monday Night Football.
So wait a minute. Does that mean you and Megan are both not doing it?
Well, Megan can still co, right? So there's a different analyst at every event.
Oh.
So Matt's doing every World Cup, and then the model of the IFSC is to have an athlete from qualifier sit in on the semi and an athlete from the semi sit in on the final.
Okay.
So they haven't adopted pairs of commentators at every event that work together consistently.
Oh, so that's interesting.
It is interesting. And it's been their model for a long time. And again, I'm not going to fault it. I do think that, like, Megan and I have worked together a few times.
Yeah,
and
I really like you guys' dynamic.
You can tell when people... So Stasha has been on a bunch of finals broadcasts as well. And it feels like that's a dynamic. So Matt and Stasha together are a good pair because mm-hmm. you learn how the other person speaks, you learn how they think, you learn what they may or may not want to say, you learn their tone, you know when they're finishing to saying something, and you know when they're pausing to say something else, so you don't cut each other off. Mm-hmm. So these are all things that take time.
Yeah.
And when you work with someone, and you know, if you watch other sports, you know commentary pairs that have it together.
Oh,
and
yeah,
they
it's
leave
magic.
Room for each other. And you're right, it's magic. That's the perfect word. And they know when, like, if I'm being quiet because I want the moment to breathe, and they know that, then the moment breathes. If they don't, and they're like, oh, he's quiet, I better fill the air, you might lose a magic moment. That knowledge is so critical. And I think that, like, broadcasting and climbing is still quite young. Mm-hmm. And there has been, you know, it was kind of a private enterprise for a while. And then the IFSC is, you know, it was, you know, 2 years ago, it was Matt did all the European ones and I did the American ones. And I wanted to do more. And I'd still like to do more. So my goal is to still do more World Cups. Mm-hmm. I also didn't do US Nationals this year because they have a mandate to hire US talent. Mm. So I kind of lost on the cross border, right? Being Canadian, I think I live in the worst place for the career I'm trying to build.
We can get married and then, you know.
And then I can live. But yeah. Then we have to move to Europe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, because you got to be central. And I get it. I understand that flying me back and forth to 23 World Cups is expensive. Matt lives in Europe. So it's a Europe-centric sport. And I live in the wasteland of Canada, the vastness of Canada. So I do appreciate that. And then this year, Canadian Nationals, if you were, I'd keep that on your calendar, there was no open Nationals broadcast because we don't have the funding. So as I want to keep building what I do, I took a big hit this year because I did none.
Oh.
So what I really pushed for starting the tail end of last year is I started reaching out to festival, like non-sanctioned events, and mm-hmm. being like, hey, this is me. This is what I do. I'm interested. Are you interested? Because I still love to MC. Mm-hmm. It's still a good time. Commentary is the closest to my heart because of the be able to like to coach basically through mm-hmm. the screen, through that venue.
Because you're coaching the general public. You're like, like, I think that's one of the things that's most important about your job. It's like a good commentator is going to make or break our sport in the long run, because if you are a bad commentator, or I don't want to say bad, if you are not good at translating movement in a way that is educating mm-hmm. the general public and making them more knowledgeable on the sport instead of just talking about it, I think that's like the thing, because we need people to be educated in it where they can speak to some degree to it and not just say like, well, none of this looks like free solo, mm-hmm. you know? And it's just like, because the rest of us are just shaking our heads like, okay, like there's more depth to this.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I don't think it takes a lot to understand the depth. I do think it takes quality information and quality commentating and quality delivering of information to get a concept of the nuance.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the best way to say it. Once again, like, I don't think it's that hard to understand, but like, if you're starting from a bad place, then you're just not going to get anywhere.
No. And if you misrepresent the level that you're speaking to and you understand the breadth of a broadcast, so you have people who might be tuning into their first climbing event. You have people who've been watching competition climbing since, like, you know, Snowbird.
Yeah.
So you can't talk down to people, and you can't undersell to people. So you have to, it has to be consistently inconsistent. In sometimes you explain what, when Megan says barn door, what that means.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to let that go. And then you have to be like, we've said this 3 or 4 times. So I did a very interesting thing. ESPN for a couple of years did a condensed highlight show of US Nationals and the team trials. So they edited together highlights of mostly focusing on the winners, mm-hmm. And then a little bit of context. And they turned the bouldering finals and then lead and speed finals into 1 hour broadcasts, which is like 43 minutes with commercials and all that. Mm-hmm. And then we commentate over it as if it was for the first time. Because obviously you can't just pull the commentary out of snippets because you lose all context.
Yeah.
So you commentate over it as though we were watching the highlights for the first time. And we did that remotely. So Megan's at home, I'm at home, and the producers are at home. We're all in different places, right? And we have a laptop and we have a call sheet and we have the timing and we just sit down. It's not live, so it's a completely different venue and it's hilarious because you can make mistakes and then you get in your own head about mistakes and then sometimes you cut yourself off and it's like, whoa, what? I'm like, I didn't like the way I said that. I sounded like an idiot. And they're like, you were fine. I'm like, I'm doing it again. I'm like, okay. And then you get Nate in your ears like, Megan's used that expression 3 times now. You got to explain it. So you're like, okay, remember who your audience is. Yes, climbers watch this. Yes, people who don't watch it need to understand what you're talking about. You can't be elite in commentary. Mm-hmm. You have to be even. And the people that, the some of the trash you see on YouTube comments are, what is this guy, an idiot? You know, yeah. He doesn't know what this is. And you're like, I promise you, I know. I'm just telling this dude's mom who's watching at home, you know, in Chattanooga, what this move is, because she's a new viewer and her son's in, you know, finals for the first time, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And in Europe, when you're doing an IFSC broadcast is on like 25 television channels throughout Europe. So the YouTube views is only North America. A lot of people watch climbing and it's on TV throughout. So you have to remember that people might just flip on the TV and be like, oh, well, let's watch some rock climbing. You're like, okay, I'd love to watch some rock climbing. I have no idea what's going on and no one's telling me. Are they going to watch again?
Probably not. That makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. Wow. Okay.
So it's important, right? It's important for our product. It's important for us to grow. I get the Olympics is a big thing. Mm-hmm. I tried to get onto the Olympic broadcast.
Yeah,
time. And just that level is turning into who you know.
That makes sense.
It's pretty tough. And I know people. Like, I had some people who, like Olympic athletes that I know who know people. And even I got some introductions through Todd Richards. So I don't know if anybody of your people watch like snowboarding, but Todd Richards is like legendary. Mm-hmm. And he's been doing snowboarding broadcasts for NBC for like forever. So him and I did the Jackalope in Montreal when we filmed it like 2 years ago. And I was like, can you introduce me to somebody at NBC to get to talk about the Olympics? And he was like, I can introduce you, but who knows where it goes. So I'm having trouble getting anyone to even call me back about doing the Olympics. And I've started a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine this is just something you got to keep chipping away.
Yeah, and people want it. And if you get into sort of the European, like basically the feed. So the CBC told me, we're just going to buy the feed that the IOC puts out. So we're not going to send anybody or spend any money on doing commentary or over commentary or in studio. And if they're going to do in studio or an analyst like in Canada, they're probably going to pick Sean McCall, Alana Yip, right? A competitor who's been to the Olympics is going to be their analyst. Full points, 100%.
Makes sense.
But they're going to buy the natural feed that the IOC is going to do.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's hard to crack the Olympics. I'm not going to stop trying.
No, I don't think you should. I think classic climber, like, you don't back off your project. No. Keep going for it.
Yeah. It takes more than one fall to knock me out.
Yeah. Well, I know they're getting ready to open this thing up and I don't want to stop them. I know they're about to blare some music, but I do want to ask two things. Like, how can people, I think I know how people can help you, but I want to ask, like, how can people help you achieve your dreams? Because I know I'm asking you to be on my show, but I think it's important for us to continue to support people that we like in the community, that are our friends, that are close to us, and we believe that are also making this space a better place and more inviting. Because I think you are doing the work with that, especially in your commentating and especially understanding that, because that's a lot of shit that we got from The Climb, the TV show. People were like, like it just wasn't that good. Like, you guys weren't like climbing these crusher things, or they just like, it just seemed really like simple. And I'm like, well, that's because they were trying to explain it to my mom to watch it. Uh-huh. Like, my mom's like, oh, you climb rocks? Oh, oh, that's great, sweetie. I think that's great. Are there any other black people that do this? And I'm like, not a lot of us. She's like, okay, well, just be out there. Cause you know, you're the one, you're probably the only one for like, maybe 100 miles. And I was like, mom, you're not actually wrong about that sometimes. Yep. And so she's like, I just want them to be portraying you correctly. You know, and like, it is like, or it's my grandmother, or, you know, Satuku, who's like, you know, Jamaican grandmother, who's like in her late 80s. And she's just like, what is this crap? Like,
what are you doing?
She doesn't even know.
No, she doesn't even know.
No, she has no idea. And so I think it's important. And I think people there's always going to be that troll. There's always going to be that troll. But I appreciate you like explaining it, because it means a lot to me. Because like I said, my parents, the kids' parents that I coach, people like that, they're going to listen to this. And the only way our sport is going to grow is if people are consistently educated. So back to the question is, how can people help you
two questions. How can people help you achieve more of your dreams? How can we be on your team? And then the second thing is how can people find you and get in touch with you and things like that?
I mean, I appreciate the opportunity to have this conversation for one. It's great. And I think you're like a fantastic advocate for the sport. So I'm really happy to be sitting in the chair with you here today, man. And I think there's a couple things. So first question has a couple answers. One is take a breath before you type something on the internet. Mm-hmm. And take a minute to be supportive or defend somebody. It doesn't have to be me. It can be an athlete. It can be another commentator. It can be a coach. It can be someone who's putting themselves out there to try and educate on the sport. So just take a breath and be like, what are they trying to do? And am I their audience? Mm-hmm. And if I'm not their audience, just take a seat and watch, right? Or help. How can I help? How can I post? How can I share? Mm-hmm. Move that stuff around. If you see something that I do that you like, share it. Like, man, this guy's trying to do good things for our community. You know, this is great. I saw this comp or I was there, post stuff. That kind of just building that awareness and saying, like, this is somebody who's doing something that is good for our sport. And eventually it sort of hits the right eyes. I'm pretty good at social media, but I'm not great at social media. Mm-hmm. And I look at people who've got like, I'm like, how do I tip over? Like, where do you get 5 and 10,000 followers? I have no idea. So by all means, you know, yeah. Like and share this post. Like, you know, that's not how I'm going to grow everything. But I think that if you watch an event or you go back and watch something historical, you're checking it all out. Just share it and be proud to like climbing. I think that mm-hmm. sometimes we're bad at being advocates for our own sport as fans.
Oh yeah.
So do that. Be a fan and enjoy being a fan and be like, yeah, man, I watched this and the athletes were great and this was great. The DJ was great. The MC was great. The commentary was great. Like, just look at the peripherals of what's going on and remember that.
I think that's heavy. I like that. Be a fan. Cause like that kind of struck a chord with me even last night, yesterday when they were like signing posters and things, like everybody's like, are you going to get a poster? I'm like, no, not really. Because like, I know, like, I don't know all of them and I know most of them. Most of the athletes, either we have traveled in the same spaces enough where like mm-hmm. I don't know them personally. They don't know me personally, but they recognize my face. Mm-hmm. I recognize their face and things like that. And so like a lot of times I'm just like, nah, I'm not going to bother them like that. But, you know, and I think of being a fan that way. But I also think what you're stating is being a fan is more of just understanding like that you're advocating for mm-hmm. the sport in a positive light and you're ensuring the growth of it, because fans ensure the growth of the sport or the individual. Prime example, Taylor Swift fans have mm-hmm. made her a billionaire.
Yeah, they get it, right? They get it. And I draw parallels with skateboarding.
Oh, yeah.
You couldn't imagine, skateboarders are like, A, they have signature models. So people will climb over each other to pick up new drops of shoes, of skate decks. Like,
yes.
So we don't do that. We don't sort of have that hero level with our climbers. Are just sort of, oh, they're just dudes. Like, I know them. It was even weird for me. I was like, I'm with Paul and Dan, because I've never met them. And I was like, can I get a picture with you? They're like, of course. And it feels weird because, like, I've been climbing longer than you and I've watched you come up and do these things. It's like, you know, it's not too cool to be like, to be a fan. So
yeah,
I think it's important to be a fan.
I definitely struggle with that because I feel like I would annoy them. And that's like my thing. Okay.
Yeah, I had the most prized possession I had was a Vision Streetwear t-shirt signed by Tony Hawk. Right? I lost it. But it was my most prized possession as a kid because the Vision Street Tour came to where I lived and I got begged to go. You know, I could not wait to go. Like I was up at night. Like waiting to go watch the best skateboarders in the world come and skateboard. And you ask people, you come to the board comp? They're like, man, I'm like, you don't want to see these eight people. Like, you don't want to see the best climbers, some of them in the world, in a space like, what were we, like 20 by 20?
Oh, yeah. To be that intimate is rare.
That's like, you know, I saw the Herbalizer play in a club in Calgary. Right. Yes. Like, that's on the list. Is that's not in a stadium, right? That's not at some huge event. Mm-hmm. That's in a basement club.
No,
so
I mean,
this is to me, that's the same level.
It's it is. It's like there's a band called Man Man, and I remember before they were even big, they played at this little teeny club. I think it was called like the Velvet Curtain or the Velvet Door on this street in this bar in Dallas. And I just remember being at the coolest show in the world. And next year, I'm like, they are on freaking Jay Leno.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like,
Yeah. So let's just imagine, let's paint the picture and then we'll wrap it up. We'll paint the picture that your favorite band is going to play your local climbing gym for free and you can go. Do you go?
Yes.
Yeah. So let's make that the same level as D Woods, Paul Robinson, Allison Vest, Maya Madeira.
Yeah.
In a tiny space. That's like big band, small club.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that's important.
And if you want to find me, MCP Woods is on Instagram. I have Facebook. I don't use it very much. Facebook just sort of does its thing.
Yeah. I mean, the Instagram and Facebook talk.
Yeah, that's it.
Fair enough. Do you have a website or anything?
I do have a website. I put a website up. I had somebody design a logo for me, which was new. Nice. So like a year and a half ago, I had someone designed a logo and I was like, well, I might as well merch? Build a website. Yeah.
Dude, where's the merch? I want some.
I know. I have one. I thought about printing and I've asked people, you know, if I made shirts, would you buy them? People are like, yeah, I would. So yeah. I'm thinking about it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm doing a rebrand of the podcast. So I'm about to get some brand new merch. We should do merch.
We'll do a little switch. Yeah. And then we post about it and we'd be fans and we share. That's how that works, right? So you find me, mcpwoods.ca, super clean. And my work experience is on there and my coaching is on there. So I'm also into teaching, like I'll come and teach a clinic. So I've tested a version of a 2-day of my 5-week clinic.
Mm-hmm.
So condensed, like back-to-back nights, like 3-hour, you know, 3+ hour sessions, and it's movement focused and it's how to break through those plateaus, how to understand, how to move better. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to do more coaching outside of my home zone. So
okay, cool.
if you are at a gym and you're like, man, that'd be great to have somebody who's spent, you know, almost 20 years coaching movement, you know, in my space, then reach out.
Okay.
And enemies, lovers and haters, I hope you enjoyed that episode with Pete Woods. This episode honestly really reminded me that your dreams are worth chasing, your dreams are worth going for. And remember, if no one's cheering on the sidelines, it does not mean that we are not rooting for you. So get after it, keep going. And remember, if you're not suffering, are you even sending at all? Drugs are not your world.